Okay. Well, thank you all for being here. Welcome back if you've been here before. Welcome for the first time if you're here for the first time. This is the last of our four-part series on bias and prejudice for moms who parent children of color. And actually, anybody else who would like to learn about the topic is very welcome here too. I'm very happy for everyone to be a part of the conversation. So in case you're new to our series, my name is Kathy Morrison, and I am a no BS woman myself, a May baby. I live in Dallas with my husband and my two kids. I taught high school and middle school Spanish for many years, and then I left to become an educational consultant. And I've spent the past 3 or 4 years facilitating anti-bias workshops for adults and anti-bullying workshops for kids. So like many of you, I parent children of color. So my kids are adopted. My daughter is from Guatemala. She's 13. And my son is Mexican, and he is 9. So that's my background. So I started telling y'all this story a couple of weeks ago. But I recently watched a TED Talk by a guy named Jay Smooth. So Jay Smooth is apparently this famous New York City DJ, and he's biracial. So his mom is white and Jewish, and his dad is Black. And anyway, his TED Talk was about how to feel comfortable talking about race, because obviously it's not usually a smooth or easy or even natural conversation to have. But one of his main points was not to let perfection be the enemy of the good. Like, we're never going to say everything perfectly, and what we say is not always going to land perfectly, but that doesn't mean we should stop trying. So he also said to remember that everyone is a work in progress, and that for as hard as we try, none of us is ever going to be completely rid of our biases. But the way he put it was really funny. He said, racism is not like a pair of tonsils. You can't just say, oh, I had that extracted in 95 and just move on. So in the spirit of Jay Smooth, let's just agree to have lots of patience with each other during this possibly awkward yet extremely important conversation. And please have patience with me too, because I'm also a work in progress. And just because I teach about bias and racism and the like, it doesn't mean that I've somehow arrived once and for all. So I'm constantly trying to learn and work on myself as well. So Fern has already reminded you of this in the chat, but if you want to send me a question or comment, feel free to do so. Just make sure that you use your little pull down menu and address it to all panelists and attendees. That way we can all see what you're writing. Okay. And yes, Vern is here again with us for the fourth week in a row, helping us with the chat. So I really appreciate you, Vern. Thank you for being here again. So your participation in these sessions is what takes everything from just kind of decent to amazing. So I'm counting on you, and you haven't let me down yet. So that's good. I'm glad that no BS ladies are here for it. All right. So let's move on, and I will show you. I want to show you our progress. As you can see on the slide, we have come a long way since the beginning of September. So today is our last class, and it's about how white privilege and racism are two sides of the same coin. But before we begin, here's a quick review from last week when we talked about identity and why being colorblind is an outdated and unhelpful ideology. So to review, colorblindness is the belief that we shouldn't see color or race because as people, we're all the same. So it sounds very nice and easy and convenient, but it is actually pretty problematic because number one, it's impossible not to see color. Number two, it negates the beauty of diversity. And then perhaps most importantly, it perpetuates racism by denying the existence of implicit bias and systemic racism. So we talked about all that last week, and then we transitioned into, talking about how building a strong sense of identity with our kids can benefit them in many ways. And we talked about the things that we do in our families to cultivate a strong sense of identity and culture. So I'm just curious, if any of you were here last week, I suggested, it's always just an optional suggestion, but did any of you actually do the little homework assignment I came up with where I said to go ask your kids what aspects of their identity were the most important to them? I'm just curious to see if anybody did that and if you learned anything new about your kiddos. And you can just let me know in the chat if you did. And if you didn't, it's fine. And if you weren't here last week, then you wouldn't have even known. So, okay, I will keep my eye on the chat in case someone is typing. All right. So here's today's agenda. First, we're going to define white privilege. Then we're going to talk about the vicious cycle of white privilege, systemic racism, and implicit bias. Third, we'll talk about what we can do to try to break that cycle. And then finally, we will wrap up the entire Anti-Bias 101 series. So before I've put a couple of definitions of white privilege up on the screen, I'd love for you to tell me in the chat what you understand the term to mean. So when you hear the term white privilege, what does that say to you? And don't be shy. If you don't know or you haven't heard of it, it's fine. But you can tell us that too. But no judgment here at all. So please feel free. Yeah, this is a safe space, as Vern says. We are learning and growing together. So what is white privilege when you hear white privilege? And you don't have to be white to answer. If you're a person of color, please answer as well. We want to get everyone's perspective. Give you a couple seconds. So if you're just joining us, I'm asking you to put in the chat what white privilege means to you. So Marilyn says white people are born with an advantage in life. Joanne says that by being born white, there are inherent things that you just never have to overcome. Mm-hmm. Yes. We're on the same page so far. Yes, good. So Stacy says that as a white person, I'm afforded more privileges than a person of color, sometimes unknown to the white person. As white person, I don't know what a person of color deals with. Yes, we're going to talk about that, how we talk so little about being white because white is kind of considered the default in our culture. Because that's just the way it's been considered for so many years. So we don't even think about, well, most of us don't even think about our privilege as we go through life, those of us who are white. Consuela says, being born white, there are some things you never understand. And I would say, and Joanne says, so true. And I would say, so true as well. So before I talk too much about white privilege, I have a follow-up question. Do you remember the first time you heard the term white privilege? Like, when was it? And what was your reaction when you heard the term? If you can remember, and maybe it's just such a part of your conscious, right? You know, your brain right now, you don't remember. But if you can remember, like, when you first started hearing it being talked about, what was your reaction to it?
I'll tell you what my reaction was. So I remember hearing about it. Well, first I'll give you a little bit of background on me. So I grew up in a financially insecure family, and sometimes we were even food insecure. And I worked like two jobs at a time while going to college full time. So when I first heard it was in the early 90s when I had just graduated. I got a teaching job and I realized that my teaching salary was not going to pay the bills, including the massive student loans that I had amassed. And so when I heard the term white privilege, I got really hung up on the word privilege. And I thought, surely they cannot be talking about me. But I just think that's because I didn't understand. Like, I wasn't even thinking about like the aspect of race in the, you know, the expression. So, let's see. Joanne says, not that long ago, she heard from the TV news. It seemed like a politically correct term. Yeah. And I remember in the 90s, like when I was a young woman, people were getting so mad about politically correct terms. And I do remember people getting mad about the term white privilege back then even. So Consuela said she's a teacher and the first time she heard it was in equity training. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So my whole point is, I think before we define what white privilege is, we should probably define what it is not, because sometimes people have a defensive reaction to it, like I did when I first heard it. So let's go over what it is not. So first of all, white privilege is not the suggestion that white people don't struggle. So lots of white people live in poverty. They work jobs they don't enjoy. They lack the health care they need and have all kinds of struggles. So in other words, privilege in this context doesn't mean rich. It doesn't mean that you have a yacht and a butler and a country club membership and all that. So another thing that white privilege is not is the assumption that everything a white person has is unearned. So most people have worked hard for their houses and their cars and the other things that they need and that they enjoy. So the word privilege gets people hung up. But you know what else? The word white also gets people hung up. So white people are not used to even giving a second thought to their skin tone. Even as our country grows more and more diverse, white people tend to think of whiteness as the default. For centuries, white people have been in power. They've been credited with making all the history. They've been the main characters in novels, children's books, and TV shows. And when you're surrounded by a culture that represents and celebrates people who look like you, then you don't have any reason to think about your race much at all. So that explains in part why a lot of people bristle when they hear the term white privilege. To the extent that some people who teach about white privilege are so worried about offending white people that they've even made moves away from using the term by replacing it with bubbles of experience and other nice little terms. Personally, I feel like if Black, Indigenous, and other people of color have lived with the experience of systemic racism for centuries, then I can probably put on my big girl pants and set aside my discomfort with the term white privilege. And anyway, the term isn't meant to be guilt-inducing for white people. These systems were in place for literally centuries before we were even born, and the systems are really powerful. So our task in the moment now is to learn about what's happening, learn about what happened in the past, evaluate our role in what's happening now, and see what we can do to make our society equitable and just for all people going forward. So just as a side note, when white people get all offended at the notion of white privilege, and even when they get really hung up on their own guilty feelings about white privilege, that's what we call white fragility. Okay, so, and you may have heard there's a recent book that's pretty famous out right now called White Fragility. It's by Robin DiAngelo. I have it on the shelf over there. I had to remind myself of the author. But anyway, white fragility is basically all the feelings of discomfort that a white person experiences when they're confronted with the idea of racial inequality and injustice. So unfortunately, that fragility or that discomfort causes a lot of people to just avoid the subject and pretend everything's okay. It's kind of like that colorblind ideology we talked about last week. It sort of like negates all the reality that's happening around us. So in order to make any progress at all in making our society fair for everyone, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is key. Okay, so back to white privilege. Peggy McIntosh is a professor who really brought this issue to the forefront in the late 80s in a paper she published called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. And I actually linked an excerpt of this paper for y'all in my references page. So if you go to the bonus course section of the PNP Tribe website, you'll see that this is referenced there. So in the excerpt is not very long, but it does thoroughly give you an idea of what she wrote. But anyway, Peggy McIntosh was not actually the first writer to use the phrase. Historians say it was probably W.E.B. Du Bois in the 1930s, but Peggy McIntosh really popularized the term. But it is telling that most people associate the term with her. Her white privilege gave her a wider audience and a microphone for talking about it. So she even lists easily finding a publisher for my paper on white privilege as one of the dozens of examples of white privilege in her paper. So, but anyway, let's take a look at the explanations of white privilege here on the screen. The first one is from Peggy McIntosh, and she says that white privilege is like an invisible, weightless knapsack of special provisions, maps, passports, code books, visas, clothes, tools, and blank checks. So she's obviously being symbolic here and not literal when she's talking about these items. Mickey Kendall, who wrote a book called Hood Feminism, says, think of white privilege as an unearned, almost randomly assigned head start. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to win the race. It just means that you could start a few feet further forward. Again, all of this is not to say that white people don't face obstacles. It's just that the color of our skin is not one of those obstacles. Okay, so in her famous paper, Peggy McIntosh listed literally dozens of examples of white privilege. Now, over 30 years later, unfortunately, they really do still hold true. And here are just a few. I'm not going to list all 47 or however many, but one is, I can go shopping alone most of the time, pretty well assured that I will not be followed or harassed. Okay, then the next one, I can be sure that my children will be given curricular materials that testify to the existence of their race. I can do well in a challenging situation without being called a credit to my race. I'm never asked to speak for all the people of my racial group. If a traffic cop pulls me over, or if the IRS audits my tax return, I can be sure that I haven't been singled out because of my race. I can choose blemish cover or bandages in flesh color and have them more or less match my skin. So those are just a few of Peggy McIntosh's examples. Now I'm gonna give you a little challenge here and see if you can fill in the blank in the chat with your own examples. So fill in the blank, you know you have white privilege if. What are some other examples you can think of? You know you have white privilege if. Fern says, you listen to the news, and when a white person does something, they don't say they were right, white. That is a really good point. That's true. They typically don't mention the race of somebody if they're white. Joanne says, you know, you have white privilege if you aren't afraid of police, right? Yeah, when I get pulled over, I'm afraid I might get a ticket, but I'm not afraid that I could die. So that is a major thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Vern says, you don't have to teach your sons at age 6 that hands stay on the wheel. Yes, that's a good point. Jacqueline says, I don't worry about where to apply for jobs or college. Mm-hmm. Right. Marilyn, you don't have to think about the color of your skin before you leave your house and throughout the day until you get back home. Then you know you have white privilege. Yes, that's true. It's something that white people just, because of white people having had more or less all the power all these years, we don't even have to think about it. Joanne says you can speak your own mind in public. Yes. And you, in like, nobody's assuming when Joanne speaks that she's speaking for every white person on earth. So, okay. She says yes. These are good ones. There's a really big one that is one of the most damaging. Oh, let's see. Here we have another one. You get cussed out. You know you have white privilege if you get cussed out at work by your white peers and it's okay. Oh, so you know not to like worry extra about it. Is that what you're saying? Okay. All right. So these are really, really good examples. And here's another one, and it's one of the most damaging. It is, you know you have white privilege if you have the ability to accumulate wealth. And I'm going to go into some detail on this one. The ability to accumulate wealth is a longstanding white privilege, and it is due to overt systemic racism. In the most recent statistics I could find, the median net worth of a white household was $171,000, but for Black households, it was just over $17,000, and for Hispanic households, it was $20,720. So the gap is absolutely humongous. And the factors that you would think would close the gap, like having a college degree, working full-time, spending less, saving more, those things actually don't close the gap. So why not? Well, a lot of that net worth comes from earning power and home value, and sometimes even from homes that are inherited. So when a family has value in their home or with the size of their income, they're able to help their children launch into early adulthood with financial support for college. They can help them buy their first cars, their first homes, and then the cycle of wealth continues. So Vern is saying, correct. My dad could not buy a house when we were kids. He had perfect credit. The only factor was his race. Yes, that is a major problem. That has been a major problem historically, and there are still shady things going on today. So historically, racist policies like redlining and other exclusionary zoning practices and housing made it basically impossible for people of color to own a home in an area with high home values. So they couldn't count on being able to invest in a home and see that money grow. So another recent example is that before the 2008 crash, people of color were targeted disproportionately for subprime mortgages. So when everything crashed, a lot of people wound up way underwater on their mortgages. So this inability to accumulate wealth through the investment in a home affects the next generation of those families and so on. So the other thing that happens is that high poverty neighborhoods tend to have lower performing schools with high suspension rates and limited resources. So people in those neighborhoods cannot count on education as some kind of magic ticket out of poverty either. So you can definitely see why the wealth gap is, it just isn't closing as the years go on, right? Okay, so back to Peggy McIntosh. So I think Peggy McIntosh by now is in her 80s, but still, all these years later, she's making the rounds and teaching about white privilege. And she addresses it in this video I'm going to play for you. It's from an NBC station in Philadelphia, and it's from earlier this summer, actually. Back it up. It always starts like in the middle for some reason when I try to play it. Okay.
It's not fair when the people have to experience this when I never have. I mean, look at me. I'm a lighter complexion.
So what is white privilege?
White privilege is advantage that I got from being born white in a culture that favors whites.
Dr. Peggy McIntosh popularized the phrase white privilege more than three decades ago. She's an author, a scholar, and says it doesn't matter if you were born rich or not. White people in this country have an advantage. In a 1989 essay, she listed 46 ways being white has helped her.
Some of my examples were if the cops pull me over, I can be sure it's not because of my skin color. I can go shopping alone, pretty well assured that I won't be harassed or followed. If I need medical help or legal help, my race won't work against me. White privilege is mostly a matter of lack of awareness of the big system within which lighter people worldwide have been advantaged.
And when talking about that system, she's talking about systemic racism. So what is systemic racism? Temple University's Dr. Malefi Asante, a leading figure in African-American studies, says it's
the enactment of policies to punish a group or to oppress a group or to suppress a group, whether it's redlining in various districts, keeping people from getting loans or getting houses, or whether it is suppression of voting.
And scholars say systemic racism is one of the factors that can contribute to unconscious or implicit bias, another term we've been hearing a lot lately. So what is implicit bias?
What it means is that people who are biased often assume that what they are doing is natural. That it is not based on racism. A person may assume that the black person who is arrested by the police must have been doing something wrong. There must have been something, you know, and in fact, many times there is nothing except the color of the person.
Both professors say the fact that the nation is starting to really talk about these terms and many others is a positive step forward. In Center City, Erin Coleman, NBC 10 News.
Okay. Let's see if I can get out of this before it starts the next one. Okay. Oops. I'm going to go back to sharing my presentation. So. Oh, okay. Give me just a sec. I accidentally closed my... out of my presentation. Sorry about that. I was so paranoid about the video, another video starting, but I hit the wrong button. Okay, let's see. Slides. Okay. I really like that video, that clip, because can you all see my presentation? If you could confirm that, I'd really appreciate it. Okay, I'm trying to get my, I can't get my chat box to pull up now. Let's see. In 2 seconds. Okay, got my Zoom. Okay. Okay. Fern says that you see me. You see me and you see me struggling with my... Okay, good. At least you can see me. Okay. Let me see how this goes. Okay. Anyway, in a second, I'm going to have to figure out how to get my chat back, but I'm going to show you this first. So I like that news piece because even though it's brief, it starts to explain the cyclical nature of this whole problem. So white privilege, systemic racism, and implicit bias are interconnected and dependent upon each other. So the situation is so cyclical that we could start anywhere on this graphic to explain what's happening, but I'm going to dive in and start with white privilege first. So as Dr. McIntosh said in the video, white privilege gives light-skinned people all over the world unearned power. So there are a lot of people who possess that unearned power, who do not want to lose it, and who are not interested in sharing it with people of color. So in order to keep that power, they're going to perpetuate systemic racism. And they do this through many varied forms of discrimination, like voter suppression, housing discrimination, and disparities in the criminal justice system. So as a result, you've got a system where people of color are not getting the people they need voted into office. They're not getting the quality asset building housing they actually qualify for. And they're in prison in completely disproportionate numbers. So then when white people see all these prisoners with dark skin and they see people of color in poor, depressed neighborhoods, they, with the help of implicit bias, come to the faulty conclusion that, well, brown and black people just must be kind of criminal in nature, and they're stuck there in those crummy neighborhoods because apparently they haven't made the effort to pull themselves up by their bootstraps to get out. And then why would we want to share power with people like that? So I hope I'm explaining this well. The problem is so much broader and more complicated than what can be explained on one slide, right? I'm just focusing here on a few examples of discrimination that are part of the cycle, but there are so many more in play. So what can we do? We need to seek opportunities to disrupt the cycle, to break the connections between these things. So do you have any ideas on how to break this cycle? Whether you're white or a person of color, do you have any ideas of what can be done in your own circle of influence to help? And if you have some ideas, go ahead and put them in the chat. And while you're putting them in the chat, I'm going to see if I can't go about getting my little toolbar back that I lost. That is, whoops. I think I'm going to have to minimize my presentation here for a second. Here it is. Okay. So I realize my screen probably doesn't look super amazing right now. Maybe you're just looking at me, but we don't need to see the presentation right this minute anyway. I'll give you an example of something that I decided to do earlier this year in order to try to kind of do my part to try to break this cycle. So I live in Texas, and one of the things that concerns me here is voter suppression. And so what I did was I went and became a volunteer, a deputy voter registrar. So I volunteer with the League of Women Voters. Like, we go out to community colleges and we go to naturalization ceremonies and register people to vote, like right after they become citizens. And like lately, we've been going to like drive through food drives at food banks, and we get people registered to vote, like with our masks on. We just kind of go up to the car and hand them the little form to fill out. So like, that's just one thing I can do, like in my little tiny world, right? I'm hoping that, you know, that way maybe some people can get into office, people that actually represent them. So Stacy says, educate friends and family about white privilege. Yes, that's a good idea. It's not always an easy conversation, but you know, it's like we said, you got to get uncomfortable you know, get comfortable about being uncomfortable sometimes. Anything else? Okay. Vern says, encourage people to compare apples to apples. In other words, rich white people to poor black people is an apples to orange comparison. Mm-hmm. Right. If you had like a massive head start in life, you can't compare where people are with each other right now, you know, financially and education wise and stuff like that. Joanne says, I try to educate people just in my own small circle about what prejudices my own kids experienced. I think that's a great approach. At least for me, that's what I do too, because, I mean, I'm white, so most of my family members are white, and they love my kids who are brown. And so when I point out like, okay, these things that are happening are going to have a direct impact on these children who you love, then people tend to listen a little bit better. Stacy says, me too. My daughter is adopted in Chinese. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going to go back to my slideshow. Where can I put the chat so I don't lose it? I want to see if I can do this. Let's see. I lost it again. But anyway, can you all, let's see. I'm not going to be able to see my chat to see if you can see my show. But I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to go to my show. And there it is. And I'm going to exit it. So if you could tell me whether or not you can see this when we're in it. Let me see. You know what? Okay. So when I go into the full screen of my presentation, can you all see it? Like, can you see? Like when I get small, when my picture gets, like, do I go small and my screen goes big? Are y'all seeing my presentation when I go to full screen? Sorry for the technical difficulties. Okay, so Joanne says no. Ugh, darn. So did you all see the screen that I put up about the, okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Let me try to get just back into Zoom here. Okay, I think I got this figured out. I'm sorry. I don't know what I did that must have been something fancy or something. Oh, I know what it was. It was when I closed out of my Google Slides. Hmm. And I think my Google Slides are gone out again. I'm so sorry, y'all. No, there they are. But my computer just doesn't want me to share them. Okay. Do this. I see myself. Ah, there it is. I think I got it back. Okay, let's try this. Yay, I think I got it back. Okay, can you all see my presentation now? Ah, thank goodness. Okay, sorry. Thank you for your patience. Okay. Okay, I love all your ideas. So educate family, educate friends. You know, encourage people, you know, not to compare apples to oranges in terms of where people are in terms of, you know, life when you've got a massive head start. Okay, so here are some other ideas. And these are not even my ideas. These are from Corey Collins. He wrote this article called What is White Privilege Really? And it's also referenced on my reference sheet. But he gives suggestions for what you can do to actually break this cycle. So I'm going to see, I've got a new chat message. Okay, so Marilyn continues to educate herself. So that's good. Yeah, you have to start with yourself before you start with others. Okay, so what can be done by white people about white privilege? So what Corey Collins says is, number one, don't make it about you. So it's natural to feel defensive or guilty when it comes to white privilege, but gnashing your teeth and wringing your hands over it is a waste of time. So instead, center your focus on how people of color feel and start coming up with a concrete plan of action to help. So next on the list, we have listen, amplify, and speak up. So listen to people of color when they speak about their experiences. Don't try to control the conversation and never question or express doubt about what they're telling you. Now, the amplify part is to use your privilege to amplify the voices of those who are sharing their experiences. So for example, with their permission, you can share the perspectives of your friends and family members who are people of color on social media. That was just an example. At work, you can make sure your colleagues of color are getting the credit they deserve for their ideas. And then that speak up part is to say something when you observe or learn about injustices. So number three is Maryland's. It's educate yourself. So read articles and books, attend webinars, and watch documentaries on things like slavery, race, and the U.S. prison system. We've talked about this before. Don't ask your friends of color to bear the responsibility for your education. So you can learn a whole lot while also respecting their space and the fact that this is a particularly traumatic time in our history. So number four would be educate fellow white people. And we said this in the chat as well. So share what you've learned with family and friends. And finally, number five is risk your unearned benefits to benefit others. So advocate for a coworker who you know is not getting equal pay or opportunities. If you're a teacher like I was, intervene if you see a student of color being treated differently by another teacher. If you see a person of color getting harassed or abused by law enforcement or other people, let them know you're there to support them and even whip out your cell phone if you need to record the interaction. You can encourage your workplace to be more inclusive. Now, these are things that take courage, and some of them take a whole lot of courage, but they're necessary if we want to break that vicious cycle that we saw before. Now, what can be done by people of color? So let's be honest. White privilege is a problem that was originally created by white people centuries ago, and it's perpetuated by white people today. So the real responsibility to fix it does largely lie with white people. However, there are things people of color can do to help break that cycle. So educate individuals if you feel the conversation is worth it. And most of all, feel free to speak up and take up space. So Lord knows white people have been doing that freely for centuries. So use that mic if someone wants to amplify your voice or speak out even if nobody is offering the mic. So when my friends of color speak up about their oppression on social media, for example, I'm all ears, and so are a lot of other people. So, and social media is just one example of a platform, of course. So, any questions about white privilege and what can be done about it? Or have you thought of any other ideas while we were looking at these ideas? Marilyn says, it's hard to feel free to speak up as a Black person. And I can imagine, I can only imagine that's true. That's why, I mean, it really is, hopefully we can, you know, create so many white allies that we can really start to chip away at the problem without expecting, it's a white problem. So hopefully as white people, we can be the ones that kind of go out there and start chipping away at that, right? while we're on the topic of white privilege and systemic racism, I want to address a related idea that comes up all the time, and it's the concept of reverse racism. So if you were here for the first session, you'll recall that we talked about the way racism is defined today as compared to in the past. So in the past, racism was considered to be any prejudice or discrimination directed against the person on the basis of their race. But nowadays, racism is always defined in the context of being a system. Now, if you're white, people of other races most definitely can harbor implicit bias against you, and they can even commit acts of prejudice against you. However, nowadays that's not called racism. It's just called an act of bias or maybe an interpersonal act of prejudice. So we don't have to accept it or say it's okay because it's not, but anti-white sentiment and prejudice don't have the power of institutions behind them. Oh yeah, thank you. I just noticed the chat. Marilyn said, this is one of the first spaces where I felt free to speak up. It means like so much to me, Marilyn. Thank you. And Vern says, that is both sad and awesome. And I totally agree. And I sincerely, you know, I am sometimes optimistic to a fault, but I'm hoping and praying that things are changing and that these kind of conversations will become more and more prevalent and common in the U.S. As people try. I mean, I see like, I see a lot of people of color, but also a lot of white people at the protests and things like that. So I'm hoping that more and more spaces will become welcoming for you to be able to tell us about your experience, Marilyn. So anyway, on the screen, I have a quote by Bree Beauchamp, and she explains why basically reverse racism just isn't even a thing. And she's addressing white people here. So she says, racism requires both prejudice and power. You may face prejudice. That's not racism because your race is in power. The criminal justice system favors white people. Social institutions favor white people and white culture. And internalized prejudices attribute favorable traits to white people. White people are irrefutably in the place of power, so reverse racism cannot exist. So does that make sense? I just want you to be prepared, because once you start going out and talking to people about white privilege, there's a really good chance that somebody's going to get defensive and come back at you with a comment about, what about reverse racism? So if you didn't know how to speak to that issue before, hopefully now you do. And I keep mentioning my little reference sheet, but Marie Beauchamp, she is actually a very young woman. I think she's only in her 20s. Well, to me, that's a very young woman. She's very wise and very mature. But she has this whole website with what to say when someone says this and what to say when someone says that. And they're all like questions about racism and things like that. And so I linked her website for you in my references because it's just brilliant. I mean, it's a great resource, you know, for our kids to, you know, we always talk about how we can be practicing our responses, because a lot of times we think 3 hours later of what we should have said. When someone said, what about reverse racism? And then we're like, and then we realized 3 hours later what we should have said. She has a great little concise collection of quick answers that you can give people to help them understand. So I love that woman. Okay, so a couple of slides ago, we talked about how people of color should feel free to take up space and speak out and allow your voices to be amplified. So an example of somebody who does this is a comedian named Amir Rahman. And one of his favorite topics happens to be reverse racism. So I'm gonna share a clip with you. And you can see how he puts himself out there and teaches a lesson while actually entertaining us with a comedy act.
A lot of people don't like my comedy. A lot of white people don't like my comedy. A lot of white people say this to me. Hey, get on stage. You make your jokes about white people. You say white people this, white people that. What if I did something like that, huh? What if I got on stage and I said, yeah, black people are like this, Muslims are like that? You'd probably call me a racist, wouldn't you? And I say, yeah, I would. You should never do that. That's bad for your health. They're like, well, you do that, Amir. You do that. You get on stage, make jokes about white people. Don't you think that's a kind of racism? Don't you think that's... dun, dun, dun. Reverse racism. So no, I don't think that's reverse racism. No, but not because I think reverse racism doesn't exist, right? If you ask some black and brown people, they'll tell you flat out, there is no such thing as reverse racism. I don't agree with that. I think there is such a thing as reverse racism. And I could be a reverse racist if I wanted to. All I would need would be a time machine, right? And what I do is I get in my time machine, I go back in time to before Europe colonized the world, right? And I convince the leaders of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Central and South America to invade and colonize Europe, right? Just occupy them, steal their land and resources, set up some kind of like, I don't know, trans-Asian slave trade where we exported white people to work on giant rice plantations in China. Just ruin Europe over the course of a couple of centuries so all their descendants would want to migrate out and live in the places where black and brown people come from. But of course, in that time, I'd make sure I set up systems that privilege black and brown people at every conceivable social, political, and economic opportunity. The white people would never have any hope of real self-determination. Just every couple of decades, make up some fake war as an excuse to go and bomb them back to the Stone Age and say for their own good because their culture is inferior, and just for kicks, subject white people to colored people's standards of beauty, so they end up hating the color of their own skin, eyes, and hair. If after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of that, I got on stage at a comedy show and said, hey, what's the deal with white people? Why can't they dance? That would be reverse racism.
Okay, I'm going to try not to make the same mistake I made last time. I think I did. I think I made it back into my presentation. Yay! Okay, if you can't see my presentation, just let me know, but I think I made it back in. Anyway, so, oh, thank you, Vern. I appreciate it. So you see, he's using his platform. He's being funny, but, you know, he's teaching a serious lesson there. So he's extraordinarily talented in that way. He happens to be, but there are ways to get your message out there. So, all right, moving on. So I'm a little bit sad because not only are we wrapping up tonight's session, but this is the end of our whole Anti-Bias 101 series. So we started with a lesson on implicit bias. Then we went on to talk about microaggressions, then the myth of colorblindness, and tonight we covered white privilege. So now I would love some feedback from you. So whether you've only been with us tonight or if you've been here for all four sessions, let me know what you've learned, like one thing that you've learned, or maybe what have you started thinking about in a different way? So if you could tell me that in the chat, I'd really appreciate it. And I'm back to being able to see my chat. Got my tech issues worked out. So what have you learned that you didn't know before, no matter how many sessions you've been to? Or what are you thinking about differently now? Hopefully something. So, and if not, that's on me, not you. But yeah. Okay, so Jacqueline says, this allows me to talk more to my children about all these topics. Oh, yay, good. That was the whole... There were a couple of purposes behind it. The main things that Corinne wanted to accomplish with this series was to help alleviate some of the stress, just to have a venue for those of us who are parenting children of color to talk to each other and give each other ideas. So, good. So Jacqueline says she's grateful for the extra resources. Yeah. And don't forget, in case you haven't been to all four sessions, even more so than going back through all the videos, I would go to all four reference pages and print those out, or not even print them out because they're easier to use if you just have them on your computer. There are so many things you can use with kids, like videos, websites. It kind of depends on the age of your kid, but if you have middle schoolers or older, I linked to some MTV resources that were really good. MTV even has this whole website where you can assess your own bias level and things like that. And on that website is where you access the microaggression videos. And then also in the resources, I have the resources from last week have curated reading lists for books for kids from like birth through young adult that you celebrate culture and things like that. So and you all are, the chat's getting away from me. Let's see. Okay, so Joanne says, just in that last video, I learned how my son also, your son's name is Amir too, uses humor like this to let out his feelings. Oh, that's interesting. Stacy said, I just started watching, so catching up, I learned implicit bias. That's good. And that's the whole root of all the problems. So if you understand implicit bias, then you really are starting to understand it all. Sherry says, I see that I'm perpetuating the problem by not speaking out. Okay. Marilyn says, this course had put many things that I only saw as black and white into perspective. Oh, good. It's all about understanding each other. I'm so glad that you've been here, Marilyn, because you've given us a lot of your own perspective too, and that helps, really helps with that mutual understanding. So Stephanie says, I didn't realize that even people of color who have wealth can have a difficult time finding housing. I also didn't know the wealth gap was so great between white people and people of color. Yeah, I knew there was a gap, but I was really shocked when I saw it was like a gap of like 10 times, like, you know, the average, what is it called? The average total worth, I'm like forgetting the phrase, but it's like 17,000 for a black family and 170,000. I mean, it's quite the humongous difference. Marilyn says, will there be an anti-bias 102? I don't know. You'll have to ask Corinne. I would be happy to come back and do anti-bias 102. There's lots of things to talk about. So, oh, thanks, Vern. That would be amazing. Vern says she's going to give that little hint to Corinne. So, okay. All right. I have another question. So we've talked about what you've learned. We've touched a little bit on how you've used this with your kids. What is one thing? So we've talked about a lot of complicated issues and problems in our society. So what is one action item that you're going to do going forward to be a part of the change that we need? Can you think of one thing? I mean, it was a big step to listen to these lessons, and hopefully you learned a lot. But what's the next thing that you're going to do? Maybe we can give each other some ideas. Stacy says, I will go on Beecham's webpage for things to say and people that need to be, to people who need to be re-educated. Yes, I highly recommend it. I mean, super straightforward, easy to understand answers for people. So it's, and I didn't even get a chance to explore her whole website, but she's got all kinds of things on there. Joanne said, read more, learn more, protest too. Mm-hmm. Good. Anything else? Stacy says, practice my talking point so when confronted with racism, I can speak clearly and confidently so the message is direct. That's a good one. I've said this many times, including today, but like I always think of the perfect thing I should have said, like much later. So it's good to have those things kind of ready to go. Especially nowadays, unfortunately, it seems like people are just saying whatever. So there are more opportunities to say things now. So Jacqueline says, I've already been bringing up these in general conversation, and we're doing a book study anatomy. Oh, is the book called Anatomy of Peace? I'll have to look that up. I'm going to write that down. Yeah, I have a like a mom's group. It's a Facebook group, but it's all local ladies. It's not my group. I mean, I just belong to it. But we study like Hood Feminism was the last book that we read. So it's great to have a book club to be so we can talk about this with other people. Marilyn says, I will speak out when I see other races. I'm sorry, when I see others being treated different because of their race. Good. Joanne says, good. And that's funny. Stacy says, hi to Stacy. Okay. All right. Anything else that you're going to do going forward? All right, I have a quote to wrap us up, and I love this quote. I mean, I love everything about Maya Angelou, but I love this quote. I think it's a perfect send-off for us. She says, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. So we've discussed a lot, and we've learned a lot in this past month, but that doesn't mean we're done. We need to keep finding ways to educate ourselves, to befriend people who are different from us, and just keep evolving. And let's see, one of the Stacy's said she heard about the Hood Feminism author. She had some good talking points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, highly recommend. Oh, Marilyn said that was my father's favorite quote. I love it because it acknowledges that we're only human, right? And we're constantly evolving. We can always get better. And Joanne said, love that quote. So does anybody have any questions about anything? Whether it's from today or previous weeks? Before we wrap up. Thanks, Fern. y'all are welcome. So I want to say thank you to all of you for all the soul bearing sharing that you've been doing with us the past 4 weeks. It's been such a growth experience for me, and I think for a lot of people. And I just want to say good luck with raising your kids, with your no BS journey, and like with everything. And it's been so nice working with you. And let's give Vern some love too, because she has been our faithful companion through this whole series. So I really, really appreciate you, Vern. You're a master at working that chat box and keeping things running smoothly. Let me make sure these comments don't get away from me. I'm going to scroll. Okay. Oh, yeah. Thank y'all. Yeah, Stacy, you're right. So we need to prepare our kids with talking points, just as if they are facing bullies, because it is bullying. So just the bullies, they're still grown-up bullies out there. So all right, thanks. All right, well, I hope you all have a good evening, a good rest of the week, a nice fall. Let's keep our fingers crossed that we actually get back to somewhat normal lives sometime soon. So, all right, I'll hope to see you all in the future. If not, I'll see you in the Facebook group in No BS. I'm Kathy Crone Morrison on Facebook. If you want to reach out, I'll put my Facebook. I have my maiden name as part of my name in Facebook. So if you want to message me or whatever, you can, I'm on the computer at least a couple times a day. So anyway, take care, everybody, and thank you.